Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. At long last, E! Delivers its second scripted series. The Arrangement comes on Sunday night, and what an arrangement in play. Creator, executive producer Jonathan Abrahams joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Netflix's next original movie is Burning Sands, detailing what hazing is all about at an all-black university. The cast, led by award winner Alfre Woodard, includes a former cast member of Everybody Hates Chris on UPN, now all grown up. Imani Jacob is who we're talking about, and we'll hear her an hour from now. And in between, we'll open our floor to you about last night's Academy Awards on ABC, from Jimmy Kimmel's hosting to the Best Picture announcement fiasco on everybody's top of mind. Get ready to call or chat them in on all that. Also ahead, could this be the least watched Oscars ever? Sci-Fi Unincorporated and our Epic Community Question of the Week. About what else? The Oscars. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Great to have you with us to wrap up February 2017 on this expanded edition of the program All About Television. This year, at the top of the hour with you for the next 90 minutes. We got a lot of people in store, and again, in our second half hour, we want you involved to call a chat room with your thoughts about what transpired last night in Hollywood. The way you do it, you use this phone number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't use that phone number to have a question or comment for any of our guests over the next hour and a half. You can also use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. It's open for business. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And our good friend Rick Webb from Philadelphia is in the room. And Rick, I expect you to be part of the next half hour, so make sure that you hang in there, and then at the bottom of the hour, give us the ring, and we want to get your thoughts on. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Jonathan Abrahams from The Arrangement on E! Will be live with us after these news notes. Despite the Best Picture controversy at the finish early this morning, as in 12:08 a.m. Eastern Time, the 2017 Academy Awards may go down as the least watched in a decade, possibly longer. That's according to Overnight Nielsen report, suggesting ABC's presentation was down by as much as 9% from last year, with 34.3 million people watched. The final tally will be released sometime tomorrow. If it ends up 31 million viewers or below, it will be the lowest audience since Nielsen started trending Oscar ceremonies in the 1970s. Anything over 31 million will make yesterday's event the lowest TV turnout since 2008. Now, to give you an update on the latest with the Best Picture controversy, where originally La La Land was introduced as the winner by presenters Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty, and then it was Moonlight that actually ended up with the Best Picture, let's explain the situation. The latest is this. At 3 a.m. this morning, PricewaterhouseCooper, that is the accountants who are responsible for tallying up the Oscar votes, released a statement that basically said, "We sincerely apologize to La La Land, Moonlight, Beatty, Dunaway, and Oscar viewers for the mix-up that happened at the end of the Oscar telecast. They acknowledged that the wrong envelope was given. The envelope actually was Best Actress. That was announced earlier, of course, was La La Land's Emma Stone, and that the envelope situation was corrected during that whole brouhaha. And also, they apologize, and they are going to have an investigation. However, Cheryl Boone Isaacs, the president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, has still not made a comment at this hour about what went on. She did not make the rounds of the morning shows, including GMA's two-hour live Oscar party here in New York, or Good Morning America, or Today, or CBS This Morning, or anyone else, and we are still waiting for a comment from her. As far as we know, she did not do a press conference with ABC or a conference call with reporters afterward. We checked the Oscars.com website. No statement from the Academy. And that's the situation as we know it right now. My personal thought, I think Isaacs should speak out. She should do a conference call with reporters, probably with ABC and PricewaterhouseCoopers together, and get this whole thing settled and do a full mea culpa to all that were impacted by this. In other TV news, Sci-Fi has pulled the plug on Incorporated, its new society drama from Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. In its rookie, now only season, the kickoff last November, Incorporated only managed between 500,000 and 1 million viewers an episode. Rave reviews and some plays on sister channel USA Network couldn't move the needle. Breaking news at this hour, Showtime is going to get the circus back for a second season next month. That's a series hosted by the Golds, respecting from Bloomberg, Bob Halperin, and John Heidelman. And Fortitude, the environmental drama that was running on Tivit before that channel turned off for good last fall, will rise for a second season on Amazon. 10 more episodes, of course, coming with Dennis Quaid as a guest star. And that is news notes. Now joining us live from Los Angeles, the creator and executive producer of The Arrangement, premiering this coming Sunday night at 10 p.m. on E!, Jonathan Abrams. Jonathan, great to have you on the program.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Pleasure. We'll get your post-Oscar thoughts a little later on in the interview. Tell us about The Arrangement. How long was this in the making?
Wow. Well, you know, I suppose it's typical to most shows, but it takes a really long time. We were pitching this in 2014, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. At the end of 2014, we were pitching, and then there's the process of writing the pilot, and then there's the waiting game to see if they're going to shoot it, and then they decide to shoot it, and there's that process, and then there's the waiting game to see if they're going to order a series, and they do, and then we shot the series, and here we finally are, premiering next week, or this Sunday, actually.
Yeah, this Sunday is what inspired this?
Right, well, I guess there's a number of inspirations. I mean, people are obviously going to draw the comparison between our show and the Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes story, and they're going to say, oh, it's a Scientology thing. And you know, those rumors are out there, and we've all heard them. But there's rumors about a lot of arranged marriages, and that's sort of been, you know, as you probably know, around since the studios have been around. So there's a little bit of that, but for me, the thing that was really interesting about it is that it's rare in today's television landscape where you get an opportunity to make a show that's really about a relationship, just about a relationship between two people and the people around them and how all the, you know, they're trying to make it work, and that's ultimately what's at the core of this. It's interesting that the director of the pilot was Ken Olin, who was on 30 something years ago, and that was one of the last shows that where you could still, you know, do a show about people in relationships. And so for me, that was one of the things that was really appealing about this and really inspired me, was the opportunity to kind of tell a story about these two people who are just trying to, you know, keep the love alive.
Ken, incidentally, is now doing episodes of This Is Us, probably the most acclaimed new series on broadcast television this year. Did you want him to bring that same kind of This Is Us spark to your series?
Well, they're very different shows, I think. I mean, This Is Us is fantastic. You know, it's a great, great show. And it comes at it, you know, it comes at things from a very real, very emotional place, and like I keep seeing these tweets from all across the internet. It's like, oh my god, I can't believe how much I cried at this episode of This Is Us, and I think that's great, and I found it very moving as well, and The Arrangement also comes from a real place, and it's emotional, but it's also, you know, it's sexy, and it's also a peak behind the curtain of this sort of glamorous Hollywood A-list lifestyle. And we were also doing this before I think either of us knew anything about This Is Us. So it was really just sort of about, like, how can we make these characters as real as possible? We've got a situation that's kind of outlandish, right? It's a contract, right? There's this contract, and it's an arranged relationship, and you know, that it's not a normal thing. It's not what normal people are involved in, but we wanted to give the impression of, like, well, how would, you know, smart, free thinking people actually make this decision. We wanted to feel like we could normalize the situation. And that was really a lot of what we talked about, Ken and I.
Jonathan Abrams is the creator and executive producer of The Arrangement. It is the second scripted series for me, the first being The Royals, which has had multiple seasons on that channel. And The Arrangement, as just noted, will premiere this Sunday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Jonathan, by the way, among his previous credits, Madman. He's live with us from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum, who is from that other coast in Webby York. Happy to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. And if you have a question or comment for Jonathan, give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Sun Records will have its second episode coming up this Thursday night on CMT, and we've got the executive producer of that series, who also has Think Factory Media. We'll have a return visit from Leslie Greene on our next episode this coming Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Also on the program, we will have the head of a brand new service coming to smart TVs and smart TV sets this week. It's called Walter Presents. It's a hit overseas, and it's all about the best international scripted television around. The Walter we're talking about, his name is Walter Izzolino, and he will be here in New York on Wednesday. I'll meet him personally, and we will not only have him on Friday, we will have one, maybe two of the stars of the scripted series he is bringing in his service. That's Walter and his stars this coming Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusive interview right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. John, explain more about the arrangement that your two characters get into.
They meet at an audition. There's an instant spark between them, and they just sort of, you know, the relationship takes off from there, and it seems to be normal at first, but then this contract shows up, and the contract is basically there because, you know, one of the characters is a big famous movie star, a celebrity, and there's all sorts of strange realities that comes along with that type of life, and the contract is there to protect him from being taken advantage of, and to make sure that his image that's out there is protected as they go along.
And the people who play in this relationship, the actors who play, are Josh Henderson and Christine Evangelista.
Yep.
Josh was on, I believe, the revival of Dallas on TNT a number of years ago, and Christine comes from Dick Wolf's Chicago series, Chicago Fire in particular. What had you bring aboard and make them turn your plot into life?
Well, it's interesting. We were, you know, so one of our stars is a big movie star. One of our characters is a big movie star, big famous movie star, and the other one is basically an unknown. And we were incredibly nervous before we started casting about finding the big star, because you got to find somebody who, you know, who can have that sort of charisma, that sort of larger than life, walks into a room and lights it up. People turn their heads just because there's that energy coming off of them. And Josh was pretty early on. He came in pretty early on in the casting process, and he just has it. It's just one of those things. He walks in, myself and Jimmy Fox, my partner and executive producer, we just kind of looked at each other and knew right away that he was the guy. He's incredibly good looking. He's incredibly talented. He can, you know, he can sing, he can dance. He's a great actor. And he also has, unlike your sort of typical, you know, Hollywood hunk, he's got a real access to his vulnerable side, which made him really interesting, really, really interesting. And so that was sort of smooth sailing. And then, interestingly enough, finding the person who could be the unknown actor, Megan, that was a longer process. And we saw a lot of people, and she needed to be a very complex character who had a lot of different layers. And we also felt like it would be better if she was an unknown because, or relatively little known because the character was that as well. We saw a lot of people, and then Christine came in, and she just has a really interesting quality. She's very accessible, but also very, very beautiful, and really, really an actor's actor. Like, really studies hard and is very academic about the work. And you know, we knew that she was going to really have to be put through her paces, and she was sort of game to sort of do anything, and met the mark at every level. So we were really excited about her.
Now, the twist here in this arrangement is that, as you mentioned earlier, there's money involved, $10 million
right.
specifically. There's also
yep.
this catch. The catch is you accepting to be my wife for $10 million, you also have to be part of the enterprise I'm involved with called the Institute of the Higher Mind, which raises, as you mentioned, for some people it's raised Scientology, comparability. Some
sure.
people are relating this to self-help programs. Some might relate to situations like Tony Robbins or Landmark, which I have to acknowledge I'm part of. I assisted Landmark, the Empower Education Program, I'm the Landmark Forum. And this is more
sure.
or retreats that have some empowerment or self-help situation. How does this play out?
Right. Well, I should say that Megan's participation with the Institute of the Higher Mind is more in the contract. There's nothing in writing that says she has to be part of it, but it is it's a big presence in Kyle's life, and you know, if you want to have a real relationship with somebody, you know, you get involved in the things they're involved in. It's interesting. I also have indirect experience with self-help organizations and stuff like that. So I was able to draw on that in terms of coming up with the Institute and sort of the things it stands for. And it's interesting, you know, we wanted to make sure that the Institute was a place that felt legitimate, that felt like that they were actually doing things to help people, that it's not a pyramid scheme or it's not a scam. It's a place where people go and they pay good money, yes, but they go, and it's an environment where you can really do a lot of work on yourself. And it was important, I think, to establish it as that. And, you know, if there are, and I don't want to spoil anything, but if there are times when there seems to be some dark forces at play, it's not about the Institute being inherently bad or inherently dark or questionable. It's about people involved and their own, you know, their own issues.
You mentioned earlier that you've been quizzed by other folks about the supposed, does this deal with Scientology in disguise? And I know Josh Henderson has also been interviewed. I saw his story in The Wrap this morning, where he's had to deal with the issue. Do both of you mind that subject has come up, or that people are relating your show that way?
I mean, no, I don't mind. It would be, honestly, it would be silly for me to expect that not to happen. You know what I mean? I mean, the parallels are there. I understand the parallels are there. And if it's something that's getting people talking about the show, and that's fine too. And if I guess I would be bothered if the parallels continued on over the course of the show. But I think if you watch, you know, as you get into it, you really see that these characters and the Institute, they're their own things. You know what I mean? This isn't we're not trying to you know, do a docudrama, you know what I mean? Or pull back the curtain on some factual thing that's out there. There are other people that are doing that, and they're doing a good job, and I'll leave that to them.
The Arrangement is the new e-scripted series that begins this Sunday night, 10:30 Pacific time. We've got the creator, executive producer, inter-exclusive interview, John Abrams, joining us live from Los Angeles. Mad Men was one of his former credits, and he is with us right now on Tomorrow Televised. Happy you're aboard as well. Simon Applebaum with you from New, wherever you are. 52 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for Jonathan? Get the ring going, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Over at Nat Geographic, Jason Silva, Mr. Brain Games himself, is a brand new series premiering next month. It's called Origins, and like Mars, which premiered last fall on that channel, it is both part scripted and unscripted. Jason Silva will be one of our guests next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jonathan, one other thing we should point out is you have two wonderful co-stars in your series. One is Lexa Doig from Continuum, and one is somebody that a lot of people have wondered about since his breakthrough role in Alias, one of Michael Barton.
Yeah. Hey, it's interesting. Michael, that came up during the casting process, and we all sort of, you know, we had seen a bunch of people, and then somebody said, "What about Michael Vartan?" We all like hit our heads, and we're like, "Of course, of course! What a perfect person to get, because he's, as he said, you know, many times, he spent so much time playing the nice guy in all of his roles, and the good boyfriend, and it was a great opportunity for him, I think, to do something that was, you know, that had more of an edge and a guy with a darker past and perhaps some questionable intentions. And for us, I mean, selfishly, it was just a great get because I think it's the kind of role that's a real conversation starter. So, and he's a fantastic actor and it's just great to see what he brings to the role. Lexa, it's interesting. I had not been all that familiar with Lexa's work before we started doing this, and she came in and she read, and she just nailed it. Her character Deanne is a really sharp Hollywood producer, and I think Lexa just has that in her bones somehow because she nailed it. She nailed it in the audition. It's interesting. She is amazingly dependable and sharp in production. And when we go through dailies, it's like she's always on it. She's always right where she needs to be. So I'm really grateful to have her on board as well.
And we're grateful to have a call, Jonathan. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to hear you, and stay on the line in the second half hour. We want to have you back to give us your Oscar thoughts from last night. So go right ahead with your question to Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan. Since you're doing a show about that's kind of close to actual people and actual groups, are you ever concerned as a producer that they may reach out to you, or one day you may come home from work and someone's bouncing up and down on your sofa and wants to talk about the show? And how you would handle
it? I have no idea what you're talking about with that sofa reference, Rick. It's really, I get that question a lot. My feeling is this: if there's anything that we're inspired by, it's all stuff that, you know, it's all rumors that everybody who's so supposedly involved would deny is true. You know what I mean? I don't know what they would be mad about. You know what I mean? I don't know any, I can speak with no authority about what really goes on, you know, in their lives or in Scientology at all. And I'm not claiming to. And I think if they were to think that I was, then, you know, they'd be admitting to something that I'm sure they don't want to admit to. So that's sort of my take on it, if that makes sense. I've never been all that concerned.
Right, right. Well, because there's also a whole thing of people being angry. It's kind of a business of being angry, of reaching out just for their own publicity and their
sure.
own end of it. So hopefully, if anything like that does happen, hopefully it works out for the show, and then you guys get ratings out of it.
Right. I haven't experienced it, and maybe if we're if our ratings are through the roof, I might. And I guess I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. So far, all's quiet on the Western Front.
Well, it definitely seems really interesting show, so I'm definitely going to check it out. And best wishes.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Rick.
Absolutely. And thank you, Simon.
You're welcome, Rick. Stay tuned. We're going to have you back on the next half hour to talk Oscars, as well as
cool.
part of our special Your Call segment. So stick around for that. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia. Jonathan, you were involved with Mad Men. Is The Arrangement your first show you created from scratch?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
And how has the Mad Men experience impacted how you put the show together?
Well, in a number of ways. I mean, it's interesting. I've had the good fortune of working with a few very, very talented showrunners. Matt Weiner is one of them. Stephen Bochco is another. And they do things very differently, and you know you kind of pick things up as you go, and a lot of it is unconscious. I mean, one of the things that I so appreciated about my time at Mad Men was witnessing Matt's really uncompromising approach to the work, where he was there. And you know, you're there to do something that's extraordinary. You know what I mean? And otherwise, why do it? Like and he was so committed to that. That I felt like was a great rallying cry for myself, in this process. Now, that's not to say I always accomplished it, but, because the other way to look at things is, you know, oh, you're making a TV show and everything's, not everything's going to be perfect and you got to live with that. And, you know, you just take it one step at a time and there's value to that. But what I really loved about Mad Men was like, just let's make something great. Let's try to make something really amazing, you know, and be uncompromising. So that's what I try to remember in the trenches.
And what was the show you worked with Stephen Bochco on? What Bochco series did you do?
I was on two shows with him. We did a show called Raising the Bar on TNT. And then we did Murder in the First, also on TNT.
Yes, I remember we had people from both shows on our program. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are both really good shows, and he's an amazing. He's sort of my father, I would say, in the business. And I think there are many writers out there who would say the same thing. So we all do our best to share, but he's just an amazing mentor and a great manager of people and of production and a great idea person, and just. It's really sort of just an example of like how you handle yourself in crazy job of being a showrunner.
Yeah. John, can you stay with us for a few more minutes? Because I would love to get your thoughts about the Oscars to kick off our next half hour. Can you do that?
Yeah, of course. I'd be happy to.
All right, great, Jonathan. So we're going to talk to you in a little bit. We're going to take a break. And before we take the break, I want to let our folks know that we are brought to you by the wonderful people at Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. And if you're a Pokemon Go fan, here's an audiobook that you might want to try in that 30-day trial that we talk about on this program. It's called The Ultimate Pokemon Go Guide by Paul Jones. And you can get that free with a trial subscription to Audible.com. There's more than 180,000 titles you can choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on now at Blog Talk Radio. And all you got to do is go to this website and get that trial going. It's audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. And go to that site, and you'll get a great experience. And by the way, in addition to the free trial, the customer service given at Audible from Amazon is top of the universe. So check out a great sound experience that lasts a lifetime. Audible.com. Remember, for the 30-day trial and the free audio book of your choice, it's audibletrial.com/televised. We come back. We will kick off our Your Call segment about the Academy Awards last night. John Manzo will chat with his thoughts about that. We hope to have Rick Webb again from Philadelphia, and you as well. So give us the ring, 646-652-2906. Use the chat room, Simon Applejoke4 by name, and coming up, we'll give you the floor. That's all after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Movie Geeks United. Stay tuned later this week for their post-Oscar show right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, Best Beat TV 24/7 at YouTube.com. And you can check out our program and other Blog Talk Radio shows 24/7 on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. That's the iTunes podcast app available on Apple TV. If you don't have Apple TV, go order it online or to an Apple store near you. Welcome back to this 90th edition of Tomorrow Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. And rejoining us right now is Jonathan Abrams, the creator and executive producer of The Arrangement, coming Sunday night on E! Jonathan, let's get this Your Call segment started. Your thoughts, first of all, about last night's Oscars.
Wow. Right? Stunning. I was obviously as shocked and surprised as everybody else at what happened. I think that it's interesting. I saw both movies. I loved them both. I was very happy to see Moonlight win ultimately. But that moment was insane. I was watching with my wife and my father, and when the reversal happened, my wife started crying tears of joy, which was interesting. And then it just occurred to me. And then of course I saw on Twitter there was a flood of tweets saying, you know, why couldn't this happen with the election? Right. And so of course my mind started turning. I was like, what if this is like some strange, covert, very subtle, symbolic protest of the election? So that was my conspiracy theory. I'm sure it's all going to come out that it wasn't, and you know, somebody just messed up with the envelope. But it was fun to think about it that way for a while.
Are you surprised that the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has not said a thing since that happened? The Price Waterhouse, the accountants, they seem to have fallen on their sword with that statement saying, you know, we sincerely apologize. But well, where is the Academy on this? Why have they not come out in public and said, you know what, it's on our watch. We should take responsibility. And we apologize too.
I don't know. I don't know. I guess. For me, I haven't really, you know, I haven't really drilled down into it. You know what I mean? In terms of, because once I saw the picture of the envelope. You know, that he had the wrong envelope and that it was sitting in his hand, that was enough for me to understand what I believe happened. And then it seems like it was probably just somebody handed him the wrong envelope, right? I mean, it'd be nice, I guess it'd be nice if there was an official explanation. That would be enough for me, I think. Like, you know, it's just an award show.
I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. And I think Jimmy Kimmel put in good perspective, too. As I'm going to make a point in a moment, it's very unfortunate that that's what we're talking about, and that we're not talking about is that this was maybe, and I've been a critic of the Oscars, Jonathan, for a long time, over everything from starting the show later than other award shows, which puts them into trouble with the time situation,
right,
to giving out technical awards that really should be highlighting the five, should be given out earlier and then put in a 5-minute recap so that they could use, you know, cut down the show and use that extra save time to do other great things. I thought this was, despite that, the best Oscar production in recent decades. Everything from the set to the how it was music direction to Jimmy Kimmel's hosting for the most part, to that wonderful tour bus segment with Gary from Chicago, who is the new star, I think, of television that we should be talking about. I thought Viola Davis is accepted to be, et cetera, et cetera. I was ready to give this ceremony a B plus, A minus. And then, of course, along came this taboo.
Yeah. No, I hear you. And I thought Jimmy Kimmel was great. I thought tonally everything was really spot on, and I knew that I knew it would get political, but it never felt cringy to me in that respect, and there's always the capacity for that. So I thought it was a great show too, and then that happened, and now it's just the weirdest show ever. I don't know.
Well, we hope in the next hour, a half hour, we can hear some more and get some reaction and hear what you folks have to say. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple, Ditto, 4x8, Rick Webb. If you're listening, give us a call. We will get you on ASAP. In the meantime, The Arrangement is the show we were talking about this past half hour. It is E's new scripted series that Jonathan Abrams is the creator and executive producer on, and you can catch it this Sunday night for the premiere, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on E. Check your local links for where E is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, well, you go to this website, www.eonline.com. It's www.eonline.com, and of course, you can also check out the website right now for all the post-Oscar coverage. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on and for the extra time about the Oscars. Good luck with the premiere of the series on Sunday night, and hopefully a very long run for your first creations in store.
Thank you so much, Simon. Really appreciate the chance.
Same here, Jonathan. All the greatest to you and all your cast and crew. Take care.
Thanks, you too.
Jonathan Abrams, creator executive producer of The Arrangement, joining us live with Extra Time from Los Angeles. So now let us hear from you. What did you think about the Oscars last night, the snafu, how it was covered, everything else? Give us that ring, 646-652-2906. Use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, but I will try to get as many of you as possible in before the top of the hour. Also coming up before the top of the hour, our Clapping Tree Question of the Week, which is about a very important fact in the history of the Academy Awards. So as I was saying, I was ready to give this show a B+, A-, so to kick off the commentary. In addition to everything I just mentioned, I also thought the best songs were very well handled as a group. John Legend was fantastic. I thought that Justin Timberlake's opening number was marvelous, although it was marred by bad ABC cam work and direction, too kinetic, too MTV, cut every 4 seconds, with no rhyme or reason. But even with that, I just thought that so much about the Oscars worked, despite the length, despite starting the show at 8:30 rather than 8 o'clock. By the way, when is ABC going to finally, and the Academy going to finally start doing what award shows like the Grammys, the Tonys, and the Oscars, and the Emmys do? Start the show at 8 o'clock, end at 11, and get out and limit the technical categories to cinematography, film editing, and visual effects. Give out the rest of the other technical categories early on the day. Do a five-minute recap, which you did with the Governor's Awards earlier in the month, and also the Science Technology Awards. If you can do it for that, you can do a five-minute recap for this. You save a lot of time, probably about 45 minutes to an hour, and you can use it for so much. But the inventiveness, and I want to credit the Oscar producers for this. I understand there were new producers this year. They really did a marvelous job. And then, of course, came the snafu. And what I want to say about that briefly is this. I give Pricewater AskCoopers credit for their as quick as possible response. They are investigating the matter, but they should not be the only ones held responsible for this. The Oscar people should also be held responsible. And again, Cheryl Boone Isaacs, I hope before the end of this week, somebody who I really respect, by the way, what she has done with the Academy the last 2 years, particularly on diversity and medium, has been fantastic. But she's got to get out of being in hiding, and she's got to talk to the press, got to get on shows and say, this is what happened, here's how we're investigating this, we apologize, we take responsibility, it is our show, and we don't just have one organization fall on their sword. We got to fall too, and I think we can just move on and make it work. So Cheryl, if you, somehow this gets to you, get off the seat, get on the air with reporters, get on the air with the morning shows, do a conference call, get reporters on, lay it all out with ABC, with Pricewaterhouse, so we can have better Oscar ceremonies from here on in. Rick, if you're hearing us, give us a call, 646-652-2906. We'd love to hear you, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name, and we'll get you on the air. By the way, I also want to welcome DAG Consulting into the room. So if you have a question or comment about the Oscars, Get it in, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. While we have a moment to get some opinions, let's do – here's Rick Webb. He finally has joined us. Hi again, Rick. How are you doing?
Hey, Simon. Doing well.
So your thoughts about the Oscars last night. How did ABC cover it? How did it go? And, of course, the announcement staff group for Best Picture.
I thought it went really well, to be honest. I mean, I'm a film geek, and I went to film school, so I always wish that there was more clips of the films and more of the just even some of the acting clips and things like that. Like, that's really why I'm watching. I'm not really watching for the musical numbers and things like that, even though I'm also a musician and I enjoy that stuff. But that's something that I've never quite understood, like why there needs to be so much extra comedy and extra musical numbers that eat up about one third of the show. But having said that, I thought it was really funny. I thought Jimmy Kimmel's, you know, interactions with Matt Damon especially went well. You know, it could have not gone too well. It could, you know, a lot of people may not have even gotten the joke, actually, who saw the show. But having said that, I thought it went really smooth. It went really well. The jokes were funny. There wasn't really any cringeworthy jokes that have happened in past Oscars. It wasn't too political, so it wasn't cringeworthy in that sense either. And to be honest, also, I watched to the end because I was expecting some kind of surprise to happen at the end. A lot because it's Jimmy Kimmel, and he does do a lot of publicity stunts. Like, obviously, he did even during the show, having the tour bus show up, which is kind of like a publicity stunt as well. So, you know, I was expecting something, to be honest. I really, even when they said La La Land won, I didn't expect that. And I was kind of like, no, I don't think so. And sure enough, then, you know, with the envelope snafu. So I don't know, conspiracy theorist, but I don't know whether Price Waterhouse were in on it or just one person at Price Waterhouse were in on it, switching some envelopes or something. But I don't know. I'm a little suspicious because you said that the ratings were down 9% this year. That, hey, no news is no news. So, you know, if there's nothing there, maybe we need to create something. That's, you know, I'm definitely not on the inside, but that's some of my opinions.
And incidentally, Rick, the highest viewership from the preliminary Nielsen that we talked about near the top of the program was at 9:30, an hour into the show. So the viewer drop-off started after 9:30 or after 10 o'clock, which is really amazing. I thought going in, by the way, that this was going to be the most competitive Oscars because you had four, five, six movies. I mean, they all could have won Best Picture. You could have given it to Fences. You could have given it to Liar. You could have given it to Manchester by the Sea. Hidden Figures, which really came on strong. And, of course, La La Land, which I saw. And I love that movie, The Smithereens, as well as Moonlight. And it was very interesting that Hacksaw Ridge did better than expected. Got two awards in film editing. Manchester by the Sea got two. One big surprise was Kenneth Lonergan winning Best Adapted Script. Incidentally, he's now working on the remake of Lie of Howard's as a miniseries on Starz, either late this year, 2018. Wonderfully talented person, who people know from films and plays and so on and so forth. Also, Amazon feels very good. Netflix, by the way, won for a short subject, The White Helmets, which came out earlier today. And it just seemed that a lot of things really clicked. So I think the problem is for me is not, you know, even if this happened in Manchester by the Sea, you could switch the film titles. But what happened, I thought, was just outrageously bad. It could have been avoided. And also, I think there was more class shown by the La La Land producers, especially the producer who, I got to feel, was heartbroken, and then had just the courage to just say, you know what, we got it right or wrong here, and so we'll do it, even though it looks embarrassing, as well as Barry Jenkins and the folks from Moonlight who just accepted this with a lot of heart and a lot of excitement and a lot of courage on their way. I just thought the Oscar producers came off looking bad.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you can't look good when something like that happens. But, you know, I don't know. I'm still wondering whether, I mean, it'll never come out whether that they switched the envelopes on purpose or whether there was a mistake on purpose. But I mean, wow, it really did wonders for you know, with Steve Harvey and you know a beauty pageant that normally wouldn't have made the news. Really made the news 10 times more worldwide. So there is a precedent for situations like that being a great news get and a great news event. So that's why I'm always suspicious. And I mean, the real reason for the Oscars is to promote the film business. It's not 100% necessarily just to give out awards. Everybody knows the best people and the don't always win the awards. It usually has to do with the best, like even best actor. It's not always best actor. It's just the best role, and they deliver on the best role. It's not always, you know, it could have been Matt Damon winning that award, you know. So that's just kind of how I see things, that sometimes you do need to make a stink or else there is no news. And if everything goes smooth, well, then no one cares sometimes, unfortunately, in today's day and age. So
yeah.
I don't know. Just studying media and studying PR and seeing what works and what doesn't work and what makes the news and what makes a big hit. You know, people, like even studying the music business, like Madonna, sometimes you need to make a controversy or else people just go, yeah, it's kind of an average song. But that's what takes a movie or a music or art over the top sometimes, is that controversy.
Yeah.
Rick, you know, three other things. By the way, if you're listening, we want to hear your thoughts about the Oscars. That's what this half hour Tomorrow We Televise is all about. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name is DAG Consulting. We're happy you're aboard. Get involved in the conversation. And coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be speaking with a former child star of Everybody Hates Chris on UPN. She's now in a very important new Netflix film called Burning Sands, premiering on March 10th, Imani Hakim. She will join us after the top of the hour. Three other points to make, Rick, about the event last night. First of all, too many and too long commercial breaks on ABC screwed things up also. Why they had to put the commercial breaks on for 3, 4, 5 minutes in a shot really extends the program way too much. And that ABC has got to take some responsibility about. So there may have to be some rethinking, I think, about how ads are put on that show. Because having 3, 4, 5 minute commercial breaks, plus local breaks too, which ran a minute or two also in the course of that pod, is really tough. Secondly, a beautiful version by Sarah Bareilles of her cover of Both Sides Now by Judy Collins, Joni Mitchell, really orchestrated by Harold Wheeler. It's an In Memoriam segment, and I'm really sorry about that snub, about what happened, another flub, which was the face was about a living person. The factual, the graphic information was correct, but the face, her name is Sarah Patterson, the person that they showed, the picture, is someone who's very much alive. And the Academy also should respond to that situation as well. And finally, how La La Land could be awarded so much, and it deserved every one of those awards too, by the way, but not have a special choreography award for Mandy Moore is absolutely outrageous. That choreography was as much a part of that film and the film being a success as anything else. We're talking about Mandy Moore, the So You Think You Can Dance choreographer, not Mandy Moore, obviously the actress and singer featured brilliantly on This Is Us. Moore deserved an Oscar for this. And I'd love to hear the Oscar people talk about why she did not get it. And I was very surprised, by the way, that Emma Stone and Damien Chazelle did not mention Mandy Moore in their thank yous. Really surprising. And I believe the producer neither. Very surprising, because Moore's choreography from the opening sequence on L.A. Freeway, which deserved that cinematography award in part, to the very end, that epilogue, how can you not give an award for that? You know, so that's my other three points on the Oscars.
Well, is there usually a choreography award for the Oscars? I mean, like, if there isn't a category for it, I guess that's why they wouldn't really even touch on it.
There's no regular category. There used to be a Best Dance Direction Oscar. This was way back in the 1930s when you had so many musicals, you know, the Busby Berkeley films from Warner Brothers, like 42nd Street and so on. There have been special awards for choreography on film. Gene Kelly won one for American in Paris back in 1951. Stanley Donen won one, I think, another year in the 50s as well. And yes, I get that you can't have a choreography work. There's not many, you know, dance films that come out or films that involve major dance numbers. But when you have a film like La La Land, where dancing is so integral to the plot, to the film, to the look, and Mandy Moore's choreography was brilliant and brilliantly done all over the place, I just think that not to honor that, the way you did the songs, the way you did the score, the way you did the performances and the film itself, even though for short-lived, Mandy Moore deserved it. And I think the Oscar people should explain why they didn't give her an honorary award or a special award for choreography. And so that's something I think the Oscars should owe an explanation for that.
That's an interesting point, because then it opens up whether there would be awards for best martial arts sequence or best fight sequence or things like that, that kind of the MTV Music Awards would do. That's kind of interesting, and maybe something that they could look at for the future add a little bit of more pizzazz, to be honest, because things like that are more interesting and more visual in an award show. I mean, I would be more into seeing things like that, special awards for certain things. I mean, I guess conversely, then people are going to start putting things into movies just to win awards, I would think. Like, oh, well, we need a big dance sequence so we can win an award or things like that. So, but like you're saying, I think that something like that could be interesting to add certain smaller, quick awards maybe, like where they don't get to give a speech, but they show some of the dance sequences and show what the choreographer did, or, you know, someone that did something special that adds to the movie industry. I think the Oscars should be more of a celebration of that as opposed to comedy routines during the awards, to be honest. And I love comedy, but sometimes I'm a little bit perplexed why there is so much of that.
I did like, by the way, the film clips like Charlize Theron and Chad's commentary and so forth being teamed up to talk about a film that really influenced their work. I believe we have another call. Let's take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi. Who's this?
Oh, this is Imani Hakim, supposed to be talking with
Simon. Imani, hi, Scott Applebaum from Tomorrow Televised. Good to have you with us. I know you'll be with us more in our next half hour talking about Burning Sands, but I wanted to get you on earlier. How many thoughts about the Oscars last night? What did you think about what transpired?
As far as the way it ended?
The way it ended, the show overall, you know, anything you want to say?
You know, I really enjoyed the Oscars last night. I'm very pleased with the people who were who won yesterday, and I think we're moving in a step in the right direction. And so I celebrated, and I'm very pleased with the Oscars.
Yeah, tremendous diversity. Certainly a far cry from what happened last year, and not just for the acting, but also behind the scenes too. It was wonderful to see Moonlight get in. Barry Jenkins went for best adapted script. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone was incredibly eloquent. And again, I mentioned Viola Davis. I will see her. I've seen her in person at the Paley Center for Media. And let me tell you, you want a self-expressed, incredibly eloquent person on a consistent basis, that's her. And what she had to say last night was absolutely brilliant and brilliantly said, and I could hear this woman and follow her anywhere.
I know. I think her speeches, whenever she gives a speech, it needs to be just posted and printed everywhere, because it's what we all need to hear, and it's what we all need to be, you know, doing. So, yeah, Viola Davis is, you know, she's dope.
All right, Armani, stay on the line. We're going to talk to you after the top of the hour. We're going to talk about your new movie, Burning Sands, which is a very special movie, I know, for you and a very special subject. So we'll get to that in a little bit, okay?
Okay, perfect. Sounds good.
You got it. Armani Arkeen, she is the co-star of Burning Sands, coming on Netflix March 10th. It's the latest original movie. She will join us again after the top of the hour. We thank her for the extra time talking about the Oscar thoughts. And Rick Webb, thank you very much for your thoughts about Oscar. We really appreciate it. And I agree with you. More film clips, more film segments, a little less comment. And I still think, the best songs, the way they were done last night, I'll take the way they do that. I think it was, and I've had issues with the best songs, how they've been presented, especially when sometimes the choreography got in the way of the music or the camera work got in the way of everything. But this ABC could really hang their hat. And Howard Weil, the musical director from Dancing with the Stars, formerly of that show, deserves extra credit for what he did with that orchestra. During the breaks, leading people on and off, just wonderful, wonderful stuff.
I agree, Simon, and the music sounded good too, which was a big deal. There have been certain years that sometimes the sound's been off on different award shows and Super Bowls and things like that, and the audio, at least on my end, seemed really high quality this year as well, which is a big deal. So, well, thanks, Simon, and I'll be listening to the next segment as well.
All right, thanks, Rick. Take care. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, joining us live from Philadelphia. Thanks for the extra time and all your Oscar thoughts. And we'd love to still hear from you, even though we're going to wrap up this part of the program. So if you have thoughts, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And I'll take you involved with our classic trivia question of the week coming up in a moment or two. And you can also find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonDWBT. All right, time for our classic trivia question of the month. Or the week, I should say. Brand new question this Monday. If you are first with the correct answer, you can win from Applause Books and Cinema the wonderful new FAQ titled Lucille Ball FAQ. As I mentioned, it deals with the Academy Award. Here's our question. What year did the Academy Award debut on television? What year did the Academy Award debut for the first time on television? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you email, please include your name and where you're from. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Lucille Ball FAQ, the latest in the popular FAQ book series published by Applause Books and Cinema. We're delighted that they provide the prize to us. And in order to win, remember, you got to be in. Again, simonapple04@yahoo.com. If you just missed the question a moment ago, don't worry. I will post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my Twitter hashtag. You can find it at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. Remember, play in and win. And again, thank you to Applause Books for providing their new FAQ title, Lucille Ball FAQ, as their prize. This is Tomorrow We Televise. We have a program about television. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio, the best internet radio around. Coming up on Friday's episode, we'll have rescheduled from last week the executive producer of the new CMT miniseries Song Records, directed by Roland Joffe of The Killing Season and The Mission Fame, Leslie Grief. He's also the head of the production company making that show, Think Factory Media, whose credits include Hatfield McCoy's, Texas Rising for the History Channel, and so much more, both scripted and unscripted. And then we will have live with us the creator of a service that's available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over Europe, and it's coming to the United States this week. It's called Walter Presents. We've got Walter himself, Walter Isolino, and you'll also meet one, maybe two, of the stars of his series. It's, by the way, it's Adventures deals with international scripted series from all over the place. You'll meet one, maybe two stars of two of the shows that will be featured on that series that are hits. One, I believe, in France, and the other in Scandinavia. That's all coming up Friday, March 3rd, our first episode of the month, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And 1 week from today, among our guests, we will have the former host of the critically acclaimed Nat Geo series, Brain Games. Now he's doing Origins, which premieres next week on the Nat Geo channel. Jason Silva will be back with us. That's all coming up next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow We Televise. When we come back, a former child star and Everybody Hates Chris on UPN grows up in a new Netflix movie about hazing at an all-black university. The movie is called Burning Sands, and the person we're talking about is Armani Arkeen. She will join us live from Los Angeles after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You are connected to www.blogtalkradio.com, the best internet radio on the planet, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Offbeat Wall Street. It's the lighter side of making money. Check it out every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Check out our show and other Blog Talk Radio programs also around the clock at Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. You can watch and hear the program. That's Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. You don't have Apple TV? Go online to order it or go to an Apple store near you. Top of the hour here on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to more of our expanded edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. And welcome to you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 52 degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest for you coming your way this half hour. And we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, you calling us. 646-652-2906. 646-652-2906. That number's good anyway. You're catching across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. We have a chat room going as well. Simon Apple 04 by name. It's at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. DAG Consulting is in the room, and our friend Rick Webb, who was featured in our last half hour, also aboard as well. So get in the room, get on the phone. We will hear you because what you say matters. Speaking of what people say matters, Netflix has a very important original movie that is premiering on March 10th. It's called Burning Sands, and it deals with the problem of hazing at colleges and universities, specifically in this case at All Black University. The cast is headed by one of the best actors around, Alfre Woodard. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the co-star of the film and an Interradio exclusive, Imani Hakim. Imani, it's great to have you with us.
Yes, thank you for having me. Yeah.
How did you get the role in Burning Sands? What made you decide to do this film?
I auditioned for the film back in November of 2015, and we didn't actually start filming the movie until May of 2016. But, you know, I read the script, and it's a story that, you know, I've never done anything like it before. I didn't really know that hazing. I've heard of hazing, but I didn't know how actually intense it was. So I read the script, and I was learning some new stuff. So I just wanted to be a part of something that, you know, tackling a subject that people don't really talk about. People kind of, like, steer away from it. So that's what attracted me to the film.
And it's not just about hazing. This is about hazing and bullying at a very high level at a very special place, which is All Black or historically Black colleges and universities, which are now getting a lot more attention because of another scripted situation, BET's The Quad, which started a few weeks ago. Growing up, did you ever have an experience of hazing, or did you know people that went through this?
I never had an experience of hazing because I never went to college, but my best friend, actually, she's in a sorority, and she's I don't know anyone personally who's gone through some crazy hazing, but she shared some stories with me about hazing at her college where kids had died from hazing. And that's why I think it's so important for us to talk about it, because it is happening, and it's happening way too often, and people are jeopardizing their lives to be a part of something, which I get it. I understand the brotherhood and the sisterhood of sororities and fraternities. I'm all for that, and this isn't to, discredit them, because, you know, fraternities and sororities, they do a lot of positive stuff in the community, but the way that they initiate people, I think we need to just talk about that and maybe take a different approach of possibly changing that, and that's why I think Burning Sands is an important project, because we're taking the cover off of the stuff that people don't really talk about. You know, people are sworn to secrecy and not to discuss this stuff, and that's why I think the movie is causing so much controversy, because people are like, okay, you guys are up here putting our stuff on blast. You know, they don't really like that much.
Now, you play Rashawn, who is the love interest to one of the students, I guess, is played by Trevor Jackson. So explain your role and how it plays out, or at least some how it plays out.
Yeah, my character name is Rashawn. I play Derek's girlfriend, which is played by Trevor Jackson. And so though the film does not focus on, you know, the female characters too heavy, the roles that we play are very important, and, you know, they have – they come on the screen, they have something to say. So Rashawn is you know, she's a fashion major. She's different than any character I've ever played, with the edginess and the strong and the power behind her. She's a person. She's a young lady who knows where she's going, and she's not going to let anyone get in the way of that. So we get to kind of see that dynamic between her and Zurich on the screen, and how that plays out with her dealing with, you know, knowing that he's pledging for this fraternity and something's not quite right there, and he's not being open and honest with her about it, and how she kind of like goes through that, and their dynamic between figuring that whole situation out.
Did you, was this movie shot on location at a an all-black campus?
Yeah, Virginia State, I believe. Yeah, we filmed in Virginia, so yeah, we filmed at an all-black campus. I believe it was all-black.
I want to point out, by the way, that the film is directed by Gerald McMurray. He co-wrote the screenplay with Christine Bird. Were there any issues with filming there? Was the school hesitant at all about having everybody there to showcase an issue like this?
No, I don't think so. I think they were pretty open to it. I think everyone was just excited to be a part of the project. And I know everyone has their reservations because it is, you know, we're talking about a sensitive topic here. But I think it's an important topic that everyone needs to be discussing. So when we were filming it, I didn't hear of any obstacles that they were facing with filming at the location of the campus. I think everyone was pretty excited about it and excited to just be a part of the film.
We are speaking with Imani Hakim. She is the co-star of the new Netflix original movie, Burning Sands. It premieres on the channel on March 10th, and you can get Netflix on most smart TV sets and most smart TV devices like Apple TV, Roku, Google Chromecast, etc. Imani joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, the program all about the tube. Simon Applebaum, we're live from New York. Delighted you're with us in the special 90-day edition to wrap up February 2017, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a call from you and your voice along with it. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Again, we welcome D.A. G Consulting and Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, into the room. You can find that room at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. SimonApple04 by name. Coming up next Monday on the program, from Brain Games, with a brand new show coming up next month on Nat Geo, the wonderful Jason Silva will join us. Origins is Nat Geo's latest effort at hybrid television, part scripted, part unscripted. Jason is one of the best communicators discussing anything on television, as Brain Games show beautifully, and we're delighted to have him back on the program for his first new series since Brain Games wrapped up some time back. That's Jason Silva from Brain Games and Origin, live with us next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What was it like working with Alfre Woodard, someone who, I have to tell you, anything this woman is in, and I've been a fan of hers ever since she made one of her early television appearances on Hill Street Blues back in the 1980s, in an extraordinary role, one of the best guest shots you'll ever see. The woman, just anytime she's around, you know she's going to give a great performance.
Yeah, you know, I've had a great opportunity of working with some legends in the game, you know, and then I didn't have any scenes with Alfre in this movie, but we got to spend some time on set, and she's just a light, and who's just overflowing with, you know, knowledge and wisdom to share with us up and coming artists. So it was just a pleasure to be in the same room with Alfre and her, just, you know, extending, you know, information and, you know, and knowledge for us young people who are coming up in this industry. And she's such a craftsman. She's such a great artist. She's so good at it. So, you know, just being in the same room with her, I was just letting all her creative juices just flow on to me.
Two other people, by the way, that are in the film I want to mention too. I've enjoyed this person's work ever since seeing him first in The Practice. That's Steve Harris. What was he like to work with?
Again, like, he was a phenomenal man, too, but I didn't actually have any scenes with these people, but we were all on the set together, you know, because we'll be going back and forth from my scene with Trevor and their scene with Trevor. So I didn't actually typically get to work with these people, but, you know, we got to hang out and chat on set. And again, it's just a pleasure for me to be working with these people and just be on the same project with these people, because I'm learning each new project that I get to do, I learn so much from the people that I'm working with. So it's like I get a free class, a free course.
Yeah. And certainly someone that certainly makes a contribution there is Common, the wonderful award-winning, Oscar-winning artist, formerly a co-star and a very big mover and shaker on the series Hell on Wheels for AMC. Did a great job with that series. He has not only a role as an executive producer, but he also brings a little music to the proceeding.
Yeah, he's a busy man. Yeah, Common joined the project later on after we were done filming, so I actually didn't learn Common was a part of the project until close to around the time we were all going to Sundance about a month ago or so. So I got to finally meet Common in person and shake hands with Common, and we were all just partying together at Sundance in Utah, which is freaking crazy. I thought it was surreal. But, yeah, it's great to have someone like Common on the project because Common, I feel like it's always – speaking about issues like this, he's a very conscious man in the industry, so it's good for him to be a part of something like this. And I've always been a fan of his music, so and he's doing so much right now. So it was awesome to know that he's been a part of the project as well.
With talent like that concentrated in a project like this, what's the most important thing that they impress on you as you are growing and growing as an actor?
I'm sorry, what's that question?
I think that, you know, with all this talent, like Alfrey, like Common, and Steve, and the other people you work with on this project, what's the most important thing that they impress on you as you are building yourself and your reputation and your style as an actor?
Yeah, I think one of the common themes of, you know, advice that I receive from these people is, you know, this is just the beginning for us, and to kind of, you know, just to really enjoy it and study the craft and surround ourselves with, you know, positive, uplifting people. You know, it's going to be a journey, and these people have lived a full life, and their careers have reached different levels. So I think they're just excited. They're just as excited to be working with us to see what we're about to do as just like we're excited to work with them and to know what they've already done and just be on the same project with them. So I think it's just an overflowing of good energy of us just being excited about each other and the project that we're on, you know, because we're this ensemble cast that's in Burning Sands is full of young people, and we're the next generation. We're coming up. We're up and coming.
Now, when people know you, they specifically know you for, as a child, being part of Everybody Hates Chris on UPN, which was a wonderful series based on the early life of Chris Rock, who, of course, was the host of the Oscars last year, and an incredibly funny and very interesting and unique person in the world of entertainment. What was it like being part of that cast and growing up in not just any old environment, but that environment with a series that was, no matter how many people saw it, was very well respected throughout its run?
Right. You know, it's funny because I was just sharing with someone that the show didn't last but only 4 seasons, and it's still held at such a high, you know, standard, and it's still compared to shows that lasted for a long time, like The Cosby Show or The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It still made an impact like those shows. So to know that I was a part of something, a part of history, and people still love that show and they respect that show, and that's just incredible to know that, because I don't think I realized the effect that our show was making when I was on the show, because I was only 11. I didn't really care about that stuff. But to look back at that now and to know that I was a part of something that's so great, it's a good feeling. And to know that was my very first job that I've ever done, and that's what started my career, it was just a blessing to be a part of that, because I learned so much from Terry Crews and Tashina Arnold. That was my family. They still are my family. I respect them so much. And Chris Rock, too, for giving me that opportunity, you know. It's a blessing.
Do you still stay in touch with your fellow cast members there?
Yeah, through social media, which is great because we love social media. It's very easy, and we text from time to time too. Yeah.
The new Netflix movie we're talking about is Burning Sands, and it was made independently and is going to premiere on Netflix as their latest original film next Friday, March 10th. And you can get Netflix if you have a smart TV set or if you have a smart TV device like Roku, Google Chromecast, Apple TV, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, Comcast is going to be launching YouTube, one of the apps that is presented on many of these smart TV set devices. In case you didn't hear, Comcast later this year is going to put YouTube on their Xfinity X1 video on demand platform. We're speaking with one of the co-stars of the movie, Imani Hakim. You may remember her from not only Everybody Hates Chris on UPN, but a wonderful film a couple of years ago on Lifetime called The Gabby Douglas Story. We'll talk about that next. And even one of the Sharknado films. And Imani joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour here on Tomorrow We Televised. Simon Applegabby with you live from New York. Happy you're aboard on this Monday afternoon. 50 degrees top of the hour. Hope the weather's great where you are. And we want to get your voice and your thoughts in the conversation. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Remember, coming up Friday on our program, our next regularly scheduled edition, we will have, from the new CMT miniseries, Sun Records, executive producer and the head of Faith Factory Media, which made the show, Leslie Greene. And from the new smart TV service, Walter Presents, making its U.S. debut later this week, we will have the Walter involved, Walter Isolino, plus we will have one, possibly two, of the stars of some of the shows you will see on that service if it's available on your smart TV set or smart device. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What was your role with the Gabby Douglas story on Lifetime?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Well, certainly, you were, before the quick break, that you were involved with the Gabby Douglas story on Lifetime, a wonderful film about one of the great gymnasts of recent Olympic history. And I'm curious your role in the film and how you got that role.
Yeah, I actually played Gabby Douglas herself, and I auditioned for the role. But the funny story is that I actually found out that they were looking for her over Twitter, and my friend tagged me in a post. And, you know, I called up my manager, my agent, like, hey, get me in for this, and I auditioned, and then got a call back, met with the director, and it was a really quick process, and I booked it, flew out to Canada. Next thing you know, I'm rehearsing to play Gabby Douglas. It was a really cool experience for me because I hadn't worked for like 3 years prior to that. So to come back in the industry by landing something so powerful like that, to be a part of telling history with someone like Gabby Douglas, that was incredible.
Did Gabby give you any thoughts like, you know, if you're going to play me, make sure you get this part of my character, this part of my life, this part of, you know, how I got to be the great gymnast I am or was?
Well, I mean, I think that really stems with that starts with the writing of the project, which the writers on the project did a phenomenal job, I think, at telling Gabby Douglas' story, which is nice because, you know, I didn't have to worry about creating that part of it. But what was lovely was throughout the entire production is I got to text and call Gabby herself and talk to her mother, and they filled me in on any questions that I may have had that weren't available in the script, where I wanted more of a background story. I read Gabby Douglas's books, I researched her on YouTube, and I just really wanted to learn about her and get to know, like, you know, she was really into her religion and her faith, and she would pray before each time, before she had any meat. So it was just, I did the research and, you know, and I got to communicate with her family throughout the whole process. So I wasn't left in the dark. So the character was always developing each day on set.
Now, one role that is coming up for you that I don't know if you've already worked on it or you're about to, but you're going to be in the fourth Sharknado film that is coming out this summer.
Oh, yeah, it actually came out last summer, but, yeah, I was in the fourth Sharknado film. I think they're filming the fifth one now. I got to do a sci-fi movie, and that, I don't know if you ever watched the Sharknado films. Do you ever watch them?
Oh, yes, all four.
They're great.
And we had Anthony Ferrante, the director of all those movies, was on our show after the first one.
Oh, okay, yeah. Anthony's great. Yeah, but the Sharknado movies are great because they're just put there to entertain you, and they do their job. They have such a huge following, and people love it. And I get why they love it, because you're going to watch that movie, and you're going to be completely entertained from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, it's like, especially when I have all the guest stars that you know from all sorts of places, TV, movies, et cetera, in your brain you have, you raise the question, who's going to get chopped, chomped, if I should say, not chopped, that's another show, who's going to get chomped, and how soon are they going to get chomped, and how, where's the shark going to come from, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, like the killings that they do are just so funny. I died in the fourth Sharknado, so a shark basically fell on top of me. So they get kind of funny with they get creative with the killings of the with the sharks and stuff. So it's a funny movie. It's great. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, and you can get killed all sorts of ways. I mean, you don't have to get bitten. You can, like you said, you can have the shark fall on top of you. You can have two sharks pop into you. You can have, get thinned to death or whatever. So Anthony and his crew just keep coming up with wild ways to have the guest stars all go down.
Yeah, and they're still going. I think it's cool. It's one of those things that people look forward to once a year. They're like, okay, they're working on the Sharknado movie. What cameos are they going to have this time, this year? And, I think the fourth one, they had a lot of, cool cameos. The cameos just get better and better each year.
Yeah, and because the special effects, and by the way, the special effects do get better and better. They get less and less corny, but they're still really spectacular and a lot of fun without being corny sounding. My favorite is still the newscaster, I think, on the beach, who's, talking about, what's going on? And then, goodbye, in, the twinkling of a second.
Yeah.
Sometimes how they do those effects is really amazing.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry, say that again.
So what's next for you after Burning Sands? Do you have a project lined up, or is there a role that you're, dying to, living to play? I'm going to not say dying. I'm going to say living to play. Be a little less
dying to play. I would really love to get into action. I really want to, get tied into Marvel. I would love that, I think. And I would love to venture into more comedy, like that Judd Apatow, Seth Rogen humor. I'm a really big fan of their work as well. And that's the type of stuff that I would like to write because I'm also a writer as well. Anything that's challenging as well. I'm pretty open to anything. This is what's great about this career is that you don't have to stick to one thing. You could just dive into whatever you want, and I don't want to put a box on myself and say I want to do one thing because, I want to just challenge myself as an artist and push myself. As far as other projects that are coming up, I have a couple of films that are coming out. One hasn't had a release date yet, so I'm not sure when that one's coming out, but I think Chocolate City 2 is later on in the year. I think more so towards August, so look out for that as well. And right now I'm also auditioning and having meetings for other potential projects.
Is there a TV show that you would like to work for that's either currently on or about to happen?
I really like Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder. Oh, no, okay, so here's the show that I would really love to be on is This Is Us. Have you seen that show? That show's amazing.
I have. It's fantastic. I hope we can get Dan Fogelman. He was on our show when we did The Neighbors for ABC 3 or 4 years ago, and I think it's the best new show on broadcast television this year. We'll get a lot of Emmy nominations. Sterling K. Brown's performance is fantastic. So is Mandy Moore, mentioned earlier. And I thought the episode last week with, I think it's Sterling K. Brown's father going back to Memphis and then passing on, I thought was one of the most incredibly emotional but wonderfully true honors. And the fact that he did it in Memphis was really special.
Right, exactly. Oh, I love that. It's just such a good show. The casting, the writing, everything about it. I agree with you. It's probably the best show on TV right now.
Yeah. At some point, do you want to do what a lot of actresses of color are now doing, whether it's Gina Rodriguez or America Ferrari or Regina King from American Crime, et cetera, and that is form your own production company and pretty much executive produce what you want to do?
Absolutely, because then you have the creative freedom to do what you you want. You get to produce the projects that you want to see on TV and film. So absolutely, that is definitely one of my goals on my list for sure.
And on that note, we will leave it there. Burning Sands premieres a week from Friday, March 10th on Netflix. You can get Netflix if you have a smart TV set or most smart TV making devices like Roku, and Amazon Fire TV, Google, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For more detail about the film and the services, we go online, www.netflix.com. www.netflix.com. Once again, Burning Sands premieres on March 10th. Amani Akeem, thank you so much for being with us. Good luck with the film, your other projects. Hope that you get into the production side of things, too, and create some great TV on your own. And we really appreciate the time and the great career you've had as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Have a good one.
You got it, Amani. Take care. All the greatest.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Amani Akeem from Burning Sands on Netflix joining us live from Los Angeles. And once again, thank you to our earlier guest, Jonathan Abraham, from The Arrangement, which premieres this Sunday, 10 p.m. Pacific time on E! Again, more online stuff available at eonline.com. So thanks to them. Thanks to Rick Webb as well. And thanks to all of you for listening and getting us your thoughts as well over the last 90 minutes or so. Coming Friday on Tomorrow Televised, we will have from Sun Records Thursday night on CMT, executive producer and the head of Think Factory Media, the company making it, Leslie Grief. And then we will have from the new smart TV service, Walter Presents, Walter himself, Walter Isolino, and one, maybe two of the stars of the international scripted series that service will present. And next Monday on Tomorrow Televised, from Brain Games, the new National Geographic series, Origins, Jason Silva. It's all coming up this Friday, next Monday, regular time, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Televised. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, make it so easy for you, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, check out our recent episodes, not only there, but on podcast at iTunes.com and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you check us out on iTunes, you can download it to your smartphone or tablet and take us on the go anytime you like. Remember, you can also get involved with the show by just communicating. What do you think about today's program? What's your thoughts about the Oscars and how things turned out, both the show and whoever won and lost? Let us know. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's how you get involved in our Class Trivia Question of the Week. We also have a feature called The Show to Know. If there's a TV show you like that you think deserves more attention, let us know by email, and we feature that show. You, of course, get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Use it anytime you like, 24/7. Also, find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. However you communicate, it's appreciated, and we respect you. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toth, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Tell Live is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Once again, for a free book and a free trial offer, 30 days lasting, great customer service too, go to audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com and Amazon Company. And by the way, they were a sponsor, at least in some cities, of last night's Oscar telecast on ABC. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your week. We're back Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.